Well, there are still 12 days to go by my counting, and I can't get too worked up at this range about Christmas. I don't know whether it's just because I don't do excitement very well, which is a great insurance policy, by the way, against disappointment. But it's also, I think, because I've kind of got a couple of bittersweet incidents that are dominating my thoughts at the moment. We became grandparents for the first time a few weeks back. Our unmarried, anonymous middle child, as she likes to be known in these circumstances, has been working as a midwife in the Congo this autumn in a little village hospital miles from nowhere. And a few weeks back, she walked in the middle of an operation there, trying to sort out an intestinal problem on a woman, and discovered on the operating table a 15-week-old baby boy. No bigger, really, than the size of a hand, still breathing. Instead of an intestinal problem, it had been an ectopic pregnancy, a pregnancy outside of the womb. The mother didn't want to know anything about the baby boy. "Throw it away," the mother said. And my daughter asked if she could look after the baby boy, and she was made to sign all kinds of papers that made her the legal guardian of these body parts, as they wanted to call him, and she took him, and for the next 9 hours, she looked after him until he inevitably died. But as she emailed home to tell us about this, she said, "I am officially the legal guardian, which I guess makes you grandparents." So I now introduce my wife, Claire, to anyone and say, "Did you know Claire's a grandmother?" But really what had motivated my daughter was seeing this helpless victim and wanting to give him some semblance of significance and love and value for the few hours that he had. And I'm proud of her. Of course, a helpless victim is one thing. A wicked person's another, isn't it? The other incident that's strongly in my mind, I went to see the film Atonement the other week. It's based on Ian McEwan's novel. And good though the film is, it actually can't match the power of this novel. On the other hand, you don't get Keira Knightley in the book. The story is really the story of Brian Italis, who was a 13-year-old, commits a crime which sends an innocent man to prison. Shatters the love relationship between him and her sister and sends an already dysfunctional family into further disintegration. And she spends the rest of her life trying to atone. Mind you, the title Atonement's a bit of a misnomer. There is no atonement. As an adult, Brian Italis is a novelist, and you suspect that as he ends the book, Ian McEwan speaks through her when he writes this. "The problem these 59 years has been this: how can a novelist achieve atonement when, with her absolute power of deciding outcomes, she's also God? There is no one, no entity or higher form that she can appeal to or be reconciled with or that can forgive her. There is nothing outside her. In her imagination, she has set the limits and the terms. No atonement for God or novelists, even if they are atheists." Well, if by atonement he means airbrushing the wrong, if by atonement he means living, continuing, you know, without a trace of what's been done, he's right. But if by atonement you mean the wrong dealt with, if you mean relationships restored in spite of the crime, well, then Christmas has got something to say. Got something to say to McEwan. For it says, there is an entity. There is a higher form. There is one outside who actually came into our world. As John put it in that reading we just had, the Word became flesh. The Word who was with God, who was God, that Word, Jesus, became flesh. There was a day when you could have been there, you could have checked it, you could have seen him. God became human. And what was he like, this elusive G-O-D God, this elusive God captured in a person? Ah, well, says John, speaking for those who are eyewitnesses, the Word became flesh, and we've seen his glory, we've seen his character, full of grace and truth. And if you've read any of the gospel accounts of the life of Jesus, you'll see that gets lived out in his life. It's the way he lives, it's the way he relates, it's the way he speaks. John pinpoints it time and time again. Do you remember the story of the woman caught in adultery, dragged in front of Jesus by people who wanted to condemn her? And after they've all discovered that they're not quite as innocent as they'd like to think, Jesus finally looks up and says to her, "Go and sin no more." There's truth there. And what you did was wrong. It does deserve the label sin. It ought to be punished. But there's grace. Go and sin no more. It's easy to talk the talk, of course, but he walks the walk. By the end of the story, he's faced the seriousness of sin. He's absorbed its just judgment himself as he dies on the cross. Now, the Christmas message is not, let's pretend you're wonderful, because you're not. And nor am I. Now, the Christmas message is full of truth. It knows there's more to us than just that we're helpless victims. It knows there is wickedness in each of us. But there's more to reality than just that kind of truth. For it speaks grace as well. And you know, when you see grace and truth together, there is something wonderfully attractive about it. Someone said to me, whatever it is he's on, I want some of it. And John tells us that's exactly what we can have. He said just earlier, he said, look, to all who received him, who believed in his name, he gave the right to become children of God. To breathe that grace and truth air, to have grace and truth brought into our genetic makeup. To be given significance and love and value. I mean, for my daughter, it was just a matter of signing a few papers. But this adoption was far bigger. This cost the Word became flesh. McEwan, in his novel, writes a happy ending because he realizes how unattractive his reality is. There is something wonderfully appealing about the honest atheist's integrity, and McEwan justifies his fictional happy ending by comparing it with the depressing reality of what he said the truth was. He said, "Who would want to believe that truth? Except in the service of the bleakest realism." Well, Christmas says there is a fact, there is a truth, that means you don't have to serve just the bleakest realism. It says the Word became flesh. And you feel even an atheist like McEwan would say, well, that's worth a second look. Helpless? Victim? Wicked? If I'm going to be honest, if you're going to be honest, we'll have to nod our head at each of those when we think of ourselves. And here's this Christmas reminder. No one has ever seen God, we're told. Yeah, true, but don't hide behind the mystery. Don't be like I was. I thought it was very convenient to be vaguely agnostic until I suddenly discovered that I was actually being criminally ignorant. I haven't earned the right to call myself an agnostic unless I've honestly faced up to the reality and the history of this Jesus, the Word who became flesh. No one's ever seen God, but God, the one and only, has made him known. And don't be frightened about what you might find when you face up to this Jesus. He's full of grace and truth. And don't think it's all beyond your reach. Christmas is wanting to tell me the adoption papers have been signed. The atonement has been paid for. And to all who received him, who believed in his name, he gave the right to become children of God. significance, love, value. That's what it means to be part of that family. The alternative is only McEwen's bleakest realism. So which family Christmas will you enjoy this year?